Legoland Podcast with David Amoyal.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to all of you that don't speak Italian, regardless of which language you're fluent or pretend to be fluent in. We're thrilled that you're joining us for the first episode of the week of the Calcioland podcast. So before we get to your transfer questions, we're going to recap a little bit what we've seen in the World Cup. We're recording this right as England's getting ready to play Tunisia. We'll answer your great Twitter questions, and we'll end it on a deep dive with Milan, with our friend Patrick Stahl, an executive producer at SiriusXM. But, you know, I was on the fence if even if we were going to talk about the World Cup that much on the podcast. I feel with Italy out, the U.S. out, we didn't have too much to bring to the table. But I have to say I enjoyed watching the game so far. I can tie it into Serie A a little bit. So I'm joined by our great friend, producer, co-host, Alex Goldberg. So I wanted to ask you, Alex, what stood out to you so far in the World Cup? This morning you got to see your boy Hazard. We saw all the top teams struggling. So what stood out to you so far?
Overall, I would say that this is why we love the World Cup. It doesn't matter if you're a favorite. It doesn't matter if you're Germany versus Mexico or Argentina versus Iceland. Part of the beauty of the World Cup is the coming together of some of these countries, is who wants it more. I mean, today, Belgium did end up beating Panama 3-0, but you could see for the first half, this meant so much to Panama just to be part of the World Cup. First time they've been in the World Cup. So, and of course, Iceland versus Argentina. Imagine that keeper. He never thought he would save a Lionel Messi penalty in the World Cup, and Mexico with a brilliant performance versus Germany. So to me, the World Cup is all about, similar to the NCAA tournament, but even more so, it's all about who's the best team, not who's the best collection of talent. But speaking of talent, David, I want to talk really quickly about the game that we were doing an episode during on Friday. Portugal-Spain, that still is the best game. And are there any appropriate words for Cristiano Ronaldo? No, there are not. This guy is unbelievable. He's unbelievable on the big stage. Much will be made, and many comments were probably made this weekend, all being a prisoner of the moment versus Ronaldo and Messi. Messi obviously not having a good first game. Ronaldo having an exquisite first game. But how can you take away from Cristiano Ronaldo? What a start. If he even sniffs this World Cup title, if he wins it, I mean, people are talking about he could be the greatest ever just because of the team titles he's won. Forget the individual titles, but quite a start from him. But overall, great tournament start so far. And I'm really intrigued. Belgium did win 3-0 today, but I'm really intrigued what top team is actually going to perform like a top team. Of course, I didn't mention Brazil as well drawing. So I'm excited. Yeah. You know, who's going to be the Cinderella team? I don't know, but I'm loving the start to the tournament, David. So that's where I'm at. What about you?
Yeah, I have to say, look, you know, without Italy in it, this is the first time in my adult life that Italy hasn't been in the World Cup. You know, had there been the U.S., I'd have a little bit of an interest with that. But I have to say, I've enjoyed it a lot. And I think you kind of hinted a little bit the Cinderella stories and anything can happen. I really can compare watching the World Cup, especially without Italy, as kind of watching March Madness, the NCAA basketball tournament. It's just 1 month long. You have teams from all different conferences, different levels arriving. You have huge upsets. You have great human stories that maybe aren't highlighted as much on the club level. So I tweeted about it. So some people got a reaction on it, but I really think it's a pretty good comparison just because of the differences. Like, I think, you know, if you want to see the great elite football, that's the Champions League. That's a full season long. It's a little bit like watching the NBA over the NCAA tournament. But the World Cup is definitely very exciting. To tie it in a little bit to Serie A, I wasn't surprised to see our boy Mandzukic be decisive for Croatia. It wasn't a very exciting match, but in the moments that mattered, he came through. Today we saw Mertens with his great goal for Belgium. I think Napoli timed his release clause pretty well. So he had a reasonable release clause, but it expired last week, so before he scored that goal. So that was exciting. And the highlight for me was, of course, our boy Milinkovic-Savic performance yesterday. And it wasn't just that, but there was a tweet from Sampdoria's keeper Viviano in response to the site in Italy The site in Italy said basically on the pitch, Milinkovic-Savic can do whatever the F he wants. I'm not going to use a full curse. Our friend Andrew Barker used all our allotment for the month. But basically, they were like, Milinkovic-Savic can just do whatever the F he wants. And Viviano, the starting keeper on Sampdoria, was like, yeah, Milinkovic-Savic truly does what he wants, where he wants, when he wants, and that's just how he rolls. So I thought that was my highlight so far was that tweet.
So, David, speaking of Milinkovic-Savic, and I was very impressed with him yesterday. If he hit that bicycle kick, that would have been incredible. What did you make of his father's quotes that Juventus would be the ideal place for him?
So this was an interesting interview, and I think a lot was made of this, maybe a little bit too much, but there were some interesting tidbits. I'm going to read verbatim. These are translated on ESPN, and so I'm taking it from there. So when he was asked that this is his dad, Nikola Milinkovic-Savic, who was a professional football player himself, asked about his son going to Juve, he said he'd be great there, and I've told him this many times. They would be the perfect club for my son in Turin at a prestigious club like the Bianconeri, who have won many titles and have been dominating for years. He would have the opportunity to grow and improve to reach his full maturity. Interesting, Juve will go very far in the Champions League, and even if they were to win the most prestigious Cup of them all, Sergei could even aim for the Ballon d'Or. So that's great and all, but then the second part of the interview, if you're a Juve fan, maybe he's not as exciting, but he also said that Juve could be a stepping stone for his son, saying it's true, but he could go to Spain after he's 25 when he's fully matured as a footballer in Italy, just like Zidane did. So for our younger listeners, Zidane arrived at Juve from Bordeaux. He was a discovery of Luciano Moggi. And, you know, while at Juve he wasn't as great as he was on France, he certainly took his game to the next level and he went to Real Madrid. So in the short term, great that Milinkovic-Savic is advising his son to go there. But he's basically saying Juve is a stepping stone. It made me think of Andrea Agnelli's Juve's president quote from a few years ago that said he has ultimately just a transient league. But look, you know, if Juve can get Milinkovic-Savic even just a few years, maybe he can get him over the hump and win the Champions League. So, you know, to me, it's all about carpe diem, enjoy the moment, not so much in the future. But interestingly, it was a little bit, it reminded me how one of my favorite players, Mauricio Isla, when he joined Juve, he got destroyed because he said, oh, it's great to be here, but my dream someday is to be at Real Madrid. So Milinkovic-Savic's dad took care of this even before a potential deal. I'm on the record that I think it's a stretch for Juve to sign Milinkovic-Savic because of the cost. If, you know, until things change, I go on the assumption that the status quo remains. Every time Juve spent a lot on Higuain, that was the summer they sold Pogba. They spent a lot on Dybala, that was the summer that Vidal left. So usually when Juve makes a big expenditure, a big name player leaves. So we would, unless things change, a player would have to leave. And I think we really shouldn't underestimate the fact that Juve already spent a lot on Douglas Costa to keep him. And the other thing is, we know they have a very difficult relationship with Lazio's president Lotito. But look, you know, these statements from Milinkovic-Savic are certainly intriguing, but I don't think it's a slam dunk he goes to Juve. But I said the same thing about Bernardeschi last season, and look what happened. So I'm sure we'll be talking more about Milinkovic-Savic in the coming weeks, but let's get to the questions from our listeners. As always, you can send in a question on transfers, Serie A, TV, music, films, using the CalcioLand hashtag. And which ones are we going to go over today, Alex?
All right, let's start with a polarizing player who got his goal taken away and it was credited as an own goal. David, what are the odds Paul Pogba returns to Juventus this summer? And also, what's the latest on Matteo Darmian?
You know, there's a lot to say about Pogba. You know, I think Milinkovic-Savic, just such an exciting performance. Pogba, you know, wasn't as brilliant for France, but when it mattered on the goals for France, I mean, Pogba was really the driving force behind him. But in a way, Pogba and Milinkovic-Savic are connected in the sense that I know, we know a lot of Manchester United fans would love to have Milinkovic-Savic, and for good reason, but it seems from all the reports that Manchester United are committed to Pogba and keeping him. He wants to stay as well. I think the arrival of Fred would likely exclude another expensive midfielder for Manchester United, just because they also want to give Pogba a realistic chance not to be the main man and not have too much competition. So let's see what happens, but I'd be shocked at this point if Pogba leaves Manchester United, and I'd be shocked to see him at Juve also because the cost would be enormous just on the wages alone. As far as Darmian, the negotiation with Juve and Manchester United, you know, they're still talking, but Manchester United is looking to get back the full transfer fee that they spent on Darmian a few years ago. I think Juve would be reticent to do it. For one, Darmian's a few years older than when Manchester United got him. I don't think his transfer value has gone up based on his performances, and he's older. But Darmian would love to go to Juve, so I think ultimately it'll happen, but they'll just have to negotiate on the price.
All right, David, next Twitter question. It's still a very popular topic. What's the latest on Maurizio Sarri's situation at Napoli?
So this is by no means an easy situation. And look, the easy part in the Sarri-Conte-Napoli triangle is Sarri agreeing to terms with Chelsea. That seems, from many reports, that seems to be the case. I also think it makes a ton of sense to bring in Gianfranco Zola with Sarri. Anyone who's listened to the podcast knows that I have strong reservations on how Sarri's personality, character, the way he deals with the media would fit in at Chelsea. So great that Zola comes with him if that deal goes through. But the hard part is getting Sarri away from Napoli. That's a big factor. Napoli's president, De Laurentiis, the interview that was published over the weekend, I assumed it was done on Friday, said that as of that point, no one from Chelsea or Sarri had contacted him about the situation. And Sarri's still under contract with Napoli. They may have Ancelotti, but Sarri's also under contract. He's on low wages, so they'd have no problem paying him and Ancelotti. So they're like, look, you want Sarri? He's an asset. You have to compensate us for it. The problem is if Chelsea expects Sarri to negotiate with Napoli to get his contract rescinded, Sarri isn't a manager that made a lot of money in his career. That would be pretty hard. So my guess is Chelsea would have to deal with Napoli for this deal to go through. And you want to add one more wrinkle is Antonio Conte. You know full well, Alex, how stubborn he is and how much he believes in suffering, and he won't make this easy. So Chelsea would also have to reach an agreement with him, almost certainly would have to pay his full buyout clause. So look, you know, I think there's a little bit more momentum for Sarri at Chelsea, but him agreeing to terms with the Blues is the easy part on this. The heavy lifting comes with the other aspects of the deal.
Oh boy, yes, this has been quite the story. All right, David, well, let's somewhat stay on that subject. Who would be better for Chelsea next season if Sarri arrives, Alvaro Morata or Gonzalo Higuain?
It's a great question, and I think it's a more of a short-term versus long-term. I think in the short term, clearly Higuain, we talked about it on Friday. I mean, I've watched Serie A a very long time. I loved watching Higuain playing for Sarri. Just an amazing duo. Higuain broke the scoring record in a season in Serie A under Sarri, but it went well beyond that. The way he played for the team, involved in the run of play. For me, that season, Higuain wasn't just the best striker in Serie A, he was the best player, period, in Serie A. So in the short term, I think Higuain. But on the, if you want to look at a little bit more long term, imagine what Sarri could do with Morata. We saw Dries Mertens become an absolute amazing goal scorer under Sarri. Higuain had his best season. So if you want to look at it a little bit more long term, it'd be intriguing to see what Sarri could do with Morata.
All right, David, well, let's stay on Chelsea. Chelsea have been linked to Matthias Vecino. What position does he play, and what are the odds he leaves Inter this summer?
So I guess Vecino is a defensive midfielder. He had that incredibly important goal for Inter in the last match that clinched a Champions League spot. But I think beyond that, wasn't the most exciting player for Inter. Definitely far from a clear starter. I think then Gagliardini and Brozovic ended up starting over him. So I'm really not sure how much he would move the needle if he goes to Chelsea. Inter spent $20 million for him last summer. They certainly wouldn't want to take a loss on him. So you could probably get him on a fairly good deal. But again, I'm not sure how much he moves the needle. And I'm not sure how much of a Sarri-type player he is. I just think right now you see a ton of names from Serie A linked to Chelsea because of the Sarri rumors. I think some are more realistic than others, but I would ask myself which one of these moved the needle for Chelsea. I mean, for me, bringing in another Zappa Costa-type player who really doesn't move the needle doesn't make that much sense.
Yeah, I'm interested in some Serie A players, and nothing against Vecino, but I'm not interested in Vecino on Chelsea. All right, so David, let's move away from Chelsea. Next Twitter question, would Javier Pastore be a good replacement for Nainggolan, and what are the odds Roma land him?
Yeah, so there's a lot of momentum for Nainggolan to Inter. I was very surprised at first. I underestimated how much his connection to Spalletti means to him. So I think there's a pretty good chance that happens, and I think Pastore would actually be a very good replacement for him. You know, Nainggolan's been playing in a more advanced position for Roma in the past few seasons. Pastore has Serie A experience, clearly a talented player. I think he'd actually be an intriguing fit in Di Francesco's scheme. So I think there's a pretty good chance both these deals happen. And look, I think they're about the same age, but I'd rather have Pastore in the next few seasons than Nainggolan. But maybe Spalletti can really energize Nainggolan. Any other coach, I'd say, you know, maybe this is the beginning of the end for Nainggolan, but he might be energized. But I think Pastore would be quite a good replacement.
All right, next Twitter question. David, could Petr Cech head to Napoli? And what's the latest on Jorginho?
So it's interesting that all the keepers linked to Napoli have ties to Ancelotti, all keepers that played for him at one point in time. So we have Areola from PSG, we have Keylor Navas from Real Madrid, and now we have Petr Cech, who was with him at Chelsea. Now, Areola at PSG is Napoli's top choice, but as we've talked about on the podcast, PSG would like to keep him because he's a young keeper that they think would really benefit from being with Buffon, and that deal's just a matter of time. So PSG won't let him go easily, but his contract does expire in 2019, so he does have some leverage. Petr Cech is an option, but Napoli would only want him on a year loan, so I'm not sure about that part. Before we get to Jorginho, Alex, you're pretty familiar with Cech, both from Chelsea and also because you followed him at Arsenal. You also watched Piperin at Napoli. I thought he was a liability there. Do you see him as an upgrade from what we saw from Piperin?
Hardly. At this point, I think Petr Cech is certainly on his way out. I love Petr Cech, and Petr Cech at his best was arguably the best Premier League keeper in the league at the time, but he has definitely dwindled. He's still been serviceable for Arsenal, but he wouldn't even be able to be, in my opinion, a full-time keeper at this point. So you already said move the needle regarding Vecino to Chelsea. I'm not sure Petr Cech moves the needle at all at Napoli.
Yeah, actually, let me get to Jorginho before we get to the next one. Yeah, Jorginho to Manchester City looks very close. At this point, they're just working out the bonuses in the deal and also the payments owed to the clubs that developed Jorginho. So I'm assuming that's Hellas Verona. At this point, even Napoli's president confirmed that deal is happening. So I'd be very surprised if it did. And I think that's a very good move for City.
Oh, Manchester City have just done excellent business. There's no point even focusing on what they're paying for players. They're getting talented, pretty much young players that fit with their team. I don't see how any other Premier League team will win the title next year. I think it's City's to win again, or shall I say to lose.
Yep.
All right, David, next Twitter question. What can be done to stop so many talented players from leaving Serie A to go play in other European leagues?
That's a great question. And look, you know, we try to keep track the players that are coming in or leaving Serie A this summer. So we'll kind of evaluate at the summer to see if Serie A's overall talent has increased or not. But actually, I would say that the trend is really starting to change. I know I've talked about it a few times, but last summer was very significant. We had a five or six players who scored over 20 goals in Serie A last season. All of them ended up staying at their teams in Serie A. We also saw two big-name Italian players change clubs, Bonucci and Bernardeschi, and instead of going abroad, which would have been what you would have expected in the past, they switched teams but stayed in Serie A. We're also seeing some positive trends. Roma no longer has FFP issues. They're still working on getting a new stadium. Inter's ownership is definitely Suning's an upgrade over what we had with Toier. Milan's ownership really up in the air, but maybe it ends up that they do get solid owners in the end. So overall, I'd say the trend is changing a little bit. Odds are, you know, we could still see some other big name players leave, but we're off to a good start to the summer. Just for the fact, if you think that De Vrij, another exciting player who had an expiring contract, he left Lazio, but to go to another Serie A team in Inter. So maybe I'm being a homer, but I see a lot of positive trends on this changing.
All right, David, how about this question? Which of the newly promoted teams has the best chance of staying up in Serie A next season?
So I haven't followed that much Serie B this season, hardly at all. So I don't like to speculate too much. We'll have a guest come in and tell us a lot more about them soon. But on paper, this is an exciting group because we had Frosinone in Serie A 2 years ago. They got back up. They should be a little bit more used to the top division. We've had Empoli, who has been a team that's done quite well in Serie A. They did bring a Sarri and a lot of exciting players. As for a provincial club, they're very well run. And then, of course, we have Parma, big name club, who's had three promotions in a row, and they seem quite ambitious. So on paper, they should bring a lot to the table. I think these should be a pretty exciting group. I think teams like Spal, Cagliari, teams like that should be a little bit concerned. They're going to have to raise the bar to stay up in Serie A.
All right, David, this is quite controversial. What did you make of Landon Donovan's ad campaign suggesting Americans support Mexico during the World Cup?
So for our listeners in the U.S., you'll know what we're talking about. There's been a lot made about this. So Landon Donovan, famous American player, did an ad campaign with Wells Fargo encouraging American fans to support Mexico. Now, you know, Wells Fargo has had a lot of problems of their own. I work in the industry. I'm licensed. I don't want to talk crap about competitors. But that's an interesting combination there. And then Donovan got in a little bit of a back and forth with another former U.S. player of Mexican descent, Bocanegra, that was a little bit unfortunate. But I did see that Darren Rovell, who covers the business angle of sports on ESPN, made a great point that, look, Wells Fargo had signed Landon Donovan to be their spokesperson before the U.S. failed to qualify for the World Cup. So they already had him on the contract. They were in a very tough spot. So they had to kind of come up with a new ad campaign, and that's what they come up with. So sometimes when you have to adjust, things like these can happen.
Yeah, that's a tough one for me to judge because admittedly, I'd be a hypocrite if I insulted Donovan for continuing on with Wells Fargo because there's clearly money at stake for him. But at the same time, I just have a hard time believing another country, if they missed the World Cup, say in Italy, would have a star of that country say, hey, support this other country because we're not
in. Yeah, that's true.
You know, I still don't love it, but I do get the whole thing that Donovan signed with them before all of that. So, David, let's move away from football for our last Twitter question. Which is the greatest band between the Beatles and the Rolling Stones?
So we're recording this on Monday. Happy birthday, Paul McCartney. Absolute legend. Huge fan of his, not just in the Beatles, but his work solo. So I really break it down to me. The Beatles, clearly popular music, whatever you want to call it, non-classical music. The Beatles are the greatest band ever. Changed culture, invented a ton of different genres. You know, Paul McCartney was the de facto leader of the Beatles. Him and Lennon wrote all the songs, but he was really the leader of the Beatles. Had them go in a lot of different directions. They invented a lot of genres. But when I think of the best rock and roll band of all time, it's clearly the Rolling Stones. The Beatles have rock songs, but they go, you know, in a lot of different genres. While the Rolling Stones are a straight-up rock band, I think the way to describe the difference is just the title of some of their early hits. The Beatles' early hit is I Want to Hold Your Hand. The Rolling Stone early hit was Let's Spend the Night Together. So that's the difference between the two bands. Rolling Stones, you know, more of a real sex, drugs, and rock and roll lifestyle. The Beatles definitely had that in them a little bit, but they had a much more clean-cut image at the beginning. So I think the Beatles are the greatest band, period, but the Rolling Stone are the greatest rock band of all time, and in a way that's almost a cooler designation. So with that out of the way, we're going to wrap it up with a deep dive on Milan. We have our friend Patrick Stahl from SiriusXM. I hope you enjoy it. As always, thank you guys for the support. We really appreciate it. Keep sending us questions for the next podcast with the Kaz Chalan hashtag. We really appreciate the reviews on iTunes. It takes 5 seconds to give us a 5-star rating. Please do that. You want to leave us a comment, we read them all. And we appreciate it. Also really helps if you download our podcast, and you can do that by subscribing it. That's really what's going to help us take to the next level. So let's get to the interview, and thank you for your support. So for the interview part of the podcast today, I wanted to start talking a little bit more about Milan. You know, there's been a lot of news on the financial situation of the club. So since there's so much uncertainty, we're not going to get into that too much, but I kind of want to take stock as to where Milan is at. So I'm very happy to be joined for the first time on Calcioland. We have Patrick Stahl, who's been an associate producer at SiriusXM. I go on a lot of their shows, and Patrick is a producer there. He's also a podcast host of his own podcast, the AC Milan Offside, which is part of the SB Nation blog, where he's also a writer. So Patrick's very well-rounded on Serie A, also has some experience in the field. So at the end of the interview, we'll ask him a little bit about his career. So hopefully our listeners looking to break into this field can get some good tips. So Patrick, it's a real pleasure to have you on. Welcome to Calcioland.
David, thanks a lot for having me on, man. I really appreciate it and excited to be on.
Terrific. So as I mentioned, you know, there's so much uncertainty with the financial situation with Milan. Now, one thing I don't like to do is I don't like to speculate. So the only thing I want to ask you is, you know, someone who supports the team and covers them, it must be really difficult to have this dark cloud hanging over you. And look, you know, we felt that when the closing of the deal finally happened, maybe that would be the end of all the drama. I thought once Milan signed Donnarumma to an extension, maybe it was a sign that the project was solid, because I was like, Raiola wouldn't leave one of his clients where it's not a good situation. But I don't know if there was that was an accurate assessment on my part. So tell me a little bit how the past few years have been with this dark cloud hanging over your head.
Well, it's been a little bit of a roller coaster, and I think you mentioned it pretty accurately that a lot of us, or at least I did as an AC Milan fan, I thought that once the club was sold from Berlusconi to the new ownership, it was pretty much assumed that, okay, now we're good, right? We have money, we're in good hands, we can engage in the transfer market more so than we did before. We can bring new players in, and this is the boost we need to go from these kind of struggling times where we never recovered from that, the roster turnover in 2012 and 2013.
Correct. Yeah.
So that was assumed to be the boost that we needed to get back to the top four consistently. Obviously, under Berlusconi, the well kind of dried up, right? He wasn't investing as much in the club anymore. And, you know, a lot of free transfers that were kind of lateral moves. So this was assumed to be what we needed, right? And the dark cloud came back once Donnarumma was like, you know, I'm not going to sign that extension. And then there was that whole drama.
Yeah.
And then there was the whole Bilia and Bonucci not being able to play immediately because the bank bonds hadn't cleared yet. And that was one of those little red flags that, like, something is clearly wrong, but we don't know how bad it is. And it's just kind of gone downhill into where I am at the point where Yang Hongli doesn't have any of this money. Like, it's straight up, I am waiting for the, as dark as this sounds, waiting for the Elliott takeover so that we can get a new owner, and then we're going to do this whole dance again, and the financial fair play sanctions, whatever they may be. So it's been a roller coaster because you had the low of, oh my God, we're not spending any money, to, oh my God, we have tons of money, to, yeah, our owner does not have any money and we're about to be owned by a bank. So it's been all over the place.
Yeah, no, I think you explained it very well. And it's interesting you mentioned, you know, back in July of 2012 when Thiago Silva and then Ibrahimovic left, for me, the Milan that I grew up with and what I always associated Milan to be, like, ceased to exist. And it's been definitely rough the last few years of Berlusconi. And we had that great start with all the money spent on the transfer market. And now it kind of feels like we're back at square one. So without speculating too much on what will happen on the financial aspect, I think one thing that we can be pretty confident on is just because of the ruling on what's going to come with UEFA, we certainly can't expect Milan to spend a fortune this summer. Yesterday we had Mirabelli at a big event in Gallipoli in southern Italy, organized by someone we've had on the podcast, Alessandro Iagobone, did a big festival on Milan. And I think to Mirabelli's credit, he was very honest. He said, look, you know, we don't want to sell a fairy tale to fans. This summer, we just can't spend a lot. We're going to mainly go with the players that we have, and we'll try to get a few additions there. Now, I will say on the bright side for Milan is you do have a lot of young players, so there is some hope that they'll get better, but it seems like the improvement's going to have to be from within. So when you look at the current squad, Patrick, which players do you have faith in? If you had to say, you know, these players can start regularly or be at least consistent producers of the players that are currently on the team, which ones come to mind?
So if we're talking about players that can start regularly in a Champions League competing, and not in terms of competing like Real Madrid, but competing for the Champions League spots and in that competition, right? I have Donnarumma, provided that he stays, Bonucci and Romagnoli. I have Kessié because he's only going to get better and he's clearly a tank. I'm a fan of his. He is a lock for that side of the midfield. And he's only going to get better. I have confidence in him. Some don't. I know that he's not technically the best player, but I think he brings a lot to the table. Stusso, provided he stays, I think he's good enough to start consistently and be a consistent producer and in a Champions League competing squad. And I'm sure that if he went to another squad in Europe, he would start for them and produce for them as well. Çalhanoğlu, I think if you had spoken to me in the first half of last season, I wouldn't have included Çalhanoğlu.
Yeah.
But I might not have included Kessié either, or Bonucci, frankly. But yeah, given Hakan's second half of the season, I think he really molded himself into that left wing role, and the danger that he brings, the creativity that he brings, you know, there's a reason they tried him at Frequartista. And while it didn't work, that's a testament to what we know that he can do. And plus his dangerous free kicks, which, you know, you can score apparently from anywhere. And then my last one might be a little bit of a shock, but it's Patrick Cutrone. He had such a good season already in his debut season for AC Milan. And he's only going to get better. He clearly loves the club. And I know that's not really a sign of his production that he loves the club, but it is a testament to he came up through the youth system. He and Locatelli and Calabria are like all really good friends, which I just love and think is really cool. But I think Cutrone is only going to get better. And if this was his starting point, I think we can expect a lot from him going forward. And I think he is one of them that we can rely on going forward. And that's a lot to put on the shoulders of the 20-year-old. And I'm not trying to say he is the next Ronaldo or Inzaghi, right? But all I am saying is he had a pretty good starting season. So if he goes uphill from here, I have full confidence in him. So I would include him on the list. There are a couple other players that are fringe, like I think Ricardo Rodriguez is good, but I don't know if he's at that level where I can confidently say, yes, him. Do I think we need a new left back? Not necessarily. I think he's good. But if you're saying, like, consistent producers on a Champions League competing squad, right now I'm not going to say him or, you know, Locatelli, Calabria, those guys. So those would be the players that I would.
Yeah. It's interesting. I'd say, I mean, I didn't watch much of Rodriguez before Milan, but on reputation alone, he was probably one of the new additions that disappointed me the most, because I was really expecting a lot from him. But you know, you mentioned, you know, you don't necessarily want to replace him, and I think it's probably true because there's just not that many good left backs to begin with that are certainly available either. So it's interesting you mentioned Cutrone, and I think he definitely deserves to be part of the project moving forward. You know, it's not the most technically gifted player, but more than makes up for it with drive and being in the right place at the right time. You know, I see a little bit of Mandzukic in him, but the other young striker mm-hmm. that Milan has is Andre Silva, and he's had certainly a very disappointing season. So it sounds like you're fine with Cutrone being part of the project moving forward. What's your take on Andre Silva? Say Milan gets a big offer for him and they can, you know, essentially make up for what at this point looks like a mistake. And look, he could turn around and do great moving forward. Would you be okay with moving him, or do you dead set on keeping him to see what he could do?
I like Andre Silva. I think he's very talented. You see it when he plays with Portugal. Obviously, he had a rough start. You know, he was one of the, it seemed like the whole squad had a rough start to the season, right? But we expected him to turn around, and that never really happened. You know, he got his two goals in Serie A, and that is just, it's troubling for a player that we spent so much money on. And the most frustrating thing is, again, like, the talent is there. It's just what is going on? Like, how do you fall below Nikola Kalinic in the depth chart? I just don't understand. So I would love for him to stay to get another chance. And I would love to see him do well at the World Cup, because then it's like, okay, we know what you can do again. Like, it's still there, obviously. We'll give you another shot. Let's see if it works better when you are doing this, you know, whether that's a false nine, whether that's pure striker, whether that is focal point, whatever you want. I'd love for him to stay, but if he goes, I'm not going to be too upset. Now, I will be upset if that means we have to see Kalinic all the time instead of seeing Silva start. I am not a Kalinic fan, but I don't know a lot of people who are at this point. But
yeah, I think you'd be hard-pressed, yeah.
I think it's hard to find people who will go rah, rah, rah for Kalinic. But I think Silva obviously has what it takes. I want to see that from him. But if they sell him to Monaco or Wolves, right? Both of which are very realistic possibilities. There are probably a couple other teams. I heard Huddersfield Town, but I mean, Wolves are going to nab him over Huddersfield, I believe, maybe. But I think if we sell him and make most of the money back, it's just a bad deal. Like, it was just a mistake, and you chalk it up to it didn't work out. Kind of like Gabigol at Inter, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah, I think that's a great comparison.
And it happens, and it's unfortunate because he's talented. I still believe in him. And I think just seeing what he can do with Portugal, you almost have to give him another shot. And look, Gattuso has confidence in him. He said the same thing. Mirabelli has said the same thing. And Mirabelli has shot down a couple, not all, but a couple of the rumored deals. Like, he was like, we're not going to swap Silva for Falcao.
Yeah.
I said, okay, well, that's great. And then he said, okay, he's going to stay. And Gattuso said the same thing. I take it with a grain of salt because it's a transfer market, but I'm okay either way. But if he stays and he doesn't perform, then that's it. We're going to end up selling him for maybe 15 million to, or 20 million to a Premier League team, and he'll get like 10 goals for them the next season. So it's kind of a lose-lose. right? So if he doesn't perform, then we can't sell him. If he does perform, we either sell him or risk him not performing with us again. So it's really hard.
It is a tough one. So we spoke briefly about Donnarumma earlier, more on the contract side of things. So look, you know, I think it's safe to say he's coming off a fairly disappointing season. I think mainly because he really spoiled us in his debut season in Serie A, where he was just really fantastic. And look, he's had a lot on his plate recently, but on a scale of 1 to 10, how confident are you that Donnarumma can go back to fulfilling what we saw from him in his first season?
Scale 1 to 10, I'd say about 7 to 8. I'm confident that he can bring that form back. I'm confident that he, with the right instruction and help, right, that he can really turn it around and fix some of the mistakes that we saw just time and time again this past season. Like, this was not a great season for him. It really wasn't. If he was rated 100 million euros at the beginning of the season, he's got to be down to 70, and he's definitely, I mean, if you say best young keeper in Serie A, Alisson is going to jump out at you first. Then Donnarumma, and that might be under a couple other people. So he is, obviously he's talented. I have no doubt in that. That kind of talent doesn't just go away. And he's young. I know that you kind of lose that, like, well, he's just young excuse after you sign a massive contract like he did. And it's hard to keep giving him the benefit doubt again and again, especially after the controversy last summer. But I think I'm confident that it can come back, but he needs to work. He needs, and whoever his goalkeeping coach is, I don't have that in front of me, but they need to work on the fact that he relies on his length and his launch point so much. You'll see it where his positioning is off because he's so used to being able to reach those balls because he's huge. I mean, he's a pretty big dude. So the fact that he can launch and reach most of these things and make those spectacular saves, great. But you also need to make some of these routine saves that you should make. You know, just because you save the ones you can doesn't mean you get out of saving the ones you should. So he needs to just work on his positioning, his technique. His reactions are obviously there. It's just the positioning initially, and also if he can get a little better at playing the ball with his feet, that would be great, because it concerns me when he starts kicking the ball out of the box a little bit. Like, okay, you gotta get rid of the ball, man, because otherwise something bad is gonna happen. I don't want to see that. But as long as he puts in the work on that and commits to it, I have absolute confidence that he'll be able to return to form.
Yeah, I agree with that assessment. So you spoke about Kalinoglu earlier, and I absolutely see him as someone that should be part of Milan's project moving forward. I see him as a clear starter for next season. And he's a player, I think if there's one player who benefited from Gattuso's arrival, it was him. His performance has really, really improved after the manager change. But the player who I think went exactly the opposite way was Suso, who I felt at some point during Montella was really a one-man team. But under Gattuso, he really regressed. And he has a 40 million euro exit clause, which in this market is definitely very reasonable for a player of his age and talent. So how upset would you be if he were to leave for that amount? Do you think what we've seen on the Gattuso is a reflection of what he'd be like at Milan moving forward, or do you think he'd be able to go back to being the player he was under Montella?
So it's an interesting question because I think it kind of goes both ways, because on one hand, 40 million is a bargain for a player of Suso's quality that he showed under Montella. However, 40 million might be highway robbery based on his second half form, which was essentially useless. He's an obviously talented player. He showed it day in, day out. If you took the points that they were able to get under Montella, probably half of those were almost directly because of Suso, either an assist ball movement that he brought that no one else seemed to want to bring, in that stagnant offense that Montella threw out there all the time. And he was the one consistency. Like, not even the formations were different every single day. But Suso was the constant, that he was always, like, backpacking the team. He was just putting the team on his back. And that obviously took a toll on him to an extent, because he had to do everything that first half, which is really unfortunate. Because, one, with all those players coming in, you would have expected a player like Çalhanoğlu, like Bilia, like Silva to contribute and make the dynamic offense that they were clearly attempting to go for. But his regression under Gattuso is definitely troubling to an extent, because Gattuso brought the best out of a lot of players on that team, except for Suso. So I don't know if that's a system thing where it's just that it didn't fit, and what Suso was bringing, it didn't lock into the system that Gattuso wanted. I don't know if he was just exhausted. You know, I don't think it's a personality thing, because you can see the fire in Suso and you can see that fire in Gattuso. So I'm not worried about that. It's just kind of, now that we have a formation down, right? You know, we're going to play a 4-3-3, right? And Suso's going to be on that right side. Çalhanoğlu is going to be on the left side. You're not going to have Suso in any of these weird assorted other positions, like putting him in the middle or putting him as a striker, or putting him as Trey Cortisa. You know, that's not going to happen anymore. I almost think that, because Suso had played under Montella before, he had never played under Gattuso before, I think that time was him adjusting to the new manager. And unfortunately, that happened in actual games that mattered instead of over the off season, which would normally happen. Am I confident he can come back? Yes. Would I be upset if he got sold for $40 million? Kinda, yeah, because he has been such a good player for them, and, you know, he was the closest we had to a talisman this season. You know, this season, the MVP, you can say, was either Cutrone or Suso or maybe Romagnoli, Bonucci, right? And last season, it was Bonaventura, right? But Suso's in that conversation this time. So it would stink to have to sell him, but I would understand why. And if Callejon comes in to replace the likes of Suso, you know, if that's the player that Gattuso wants and will bring what he's looking for and replace a part of Suso's production, then If there's a plan in place, go for it. But if we're just selling him for some money, and then it's like, oh, well, now we need a winger. What are we going to do? And it's like, oh, let's get Callejon. He's the closest thing. You know, if it's kind of just falling back, let's try not to do that. But if there's a plan of, okay, Suso doesn't fit in the system, we're going to go with this, and we're going to do ABC, right? Then I'm okay. And that kind of goes back to some faith in Gattuso.
Speaking of Suso, you know, I think there was a lot of, I certainly didn't expect when he was appointed that he would do as well as he did. And, you know, a lot of people think maybe he was given an extension prematurely by Milan after, you know, the tide had turned in a positive way. But I remain of the opinion, when I look at Milan's situation right now, it would be hard to attract someone better. And I think Gattuso, there's a lot of pluses that he brings with the current situation at Milan. So what's your take? Are you pretty happy that he's going to be the manager moving forward, or would you have liked to maybe bring someone else in?
I am pretty happy with Gattuso. I think he was able to really right the ship that was just completely sunk by Vincenzo Montella. You know, a lot of things went wrong under Montella, and Gattuso is one of the managers, and there's a laundry list of them in the past couple of years, that came into Milan having to not only clean up the mess of the guy before him, but, oh, yeah, you have to rescue us to a certain point. And, you know, Seedorf had to do it. Inzaghi had to do it. You know, all these different coaches had to come in. And Gattuso was in that boat, too. I actually wrote a column for the AC Milan Offside on SB Nation saying, if Gattuso is part of a plan, good. But if not, I don't want to see him added to the Milan coaching carousel that we've experienced for the last five years. Yeah, five. And I think what he did was he righted the ship is the best way to say it for me. So he is obviously a good player manager where he can relate to the players. And I know Montella can relate to play, you know, Montella played too, but he can relate to the players. He can relate to the club. He obviously has passion. He always has. And he demands respect as soon as he walks in the room. Like, that's Rino Gattuso. That, like, you almost have to listen to him, right? And I don't think Vincenzo Montella was able to handle the locker room or all the new additions. I also think there was too much pressure under him. That's not what he had signed up for. And then you are expected to place anywhere from 1 to 3 in the league, right? That's not what Vincenzo Montella was brought in. And that was an extension that was a mistake. I think Gattuso was able to bring the team together, bring consistency where there was none, right? And help some of these players who are struggling to really, like, okay, this is what I want you to do. You know, Kessie, this is your job. Instead of, I need you to do everything. Or, Bilia, this is your job. Instead of whatever he was told to do under Montella. So I have confidence in Gattuso. I like Gattuso. And, okay, if you say, would you have liked Carlo Ancelotti? Like, okay, yeah, everyone. Everyone would probably take Carlo Ancelotti, except for maybe Manchester City would take Carlo Ancelotti as their manager right now. And I guess also not Bayern Munich. But Milan has too many question marks, like you said, to bring in a really, really big name manager. So then are you going to switch from Gattuso, who clearly has something clicking with this team, see the unbeaten streak? I mean, that is the perfect example of what he can do with this team. And they, in the second half of the season, were either second or third in Serie A in terms of points. So I have confidence in him, and Milan had way too many question marks to bring in a big man. No big name manager would, no matter how much you're paying them with money we probably don't have, is going to be willing to take up a job with that many question marks. Carlo Ancelotti is not a manager you bring in to build a team. It's to take, he's to take a built team and bring them to the next level of let's win the Champions League or let's win the league or et cetera. And Milan isn't at that point. Unfortunately, I mean, yeah, sure. We finished sixth, right? Again, it's not, like, he's not going to do that. Antonio Conte is not going to do that, you know. So right now, not only does Gattuso have, like, a rapport with this team, but quite frankly, and this is kind of minimalizing his accomplishments and, like, what he's done, but he's the best we got. So, like, what else are we going to do? Like, yeah, okay, that's the negative side. The positive side is look at what he was able to do. Now give him a full off season minus World Cup and some transfers that he wants, like, you know, the one or two that we can probably afford, and give him a full season. Please don't fire him on February 5th, right? After like two consecutive losses to like Inter and Napoli, right? Like, please don't just go and fire him, right? Because they've had that quick trigger finger. And that has obviously hurt the club.
Absolutely. So, Patrick, I really enjoyed getting your take on Milan. Thank you so much for sharing that. And I wanted to ask you a little bit about your career. A lot of our listeners, you know, are interested in breaking in various fields in journalism. And as I mentioned at the top, you're an associate producer at SiriusXM. For the people out of the U.S. who aren't familiar with it, that's a huge satellite radio station that does a lot of different things, music. They have Howard Stern's show. They have a dedicated football, we'll call it soccer station, for people in the U.S., and I've done a lot of shows on there with a lot of great guys. So tell our listeners a little bit how you got into that field and what advice would you give yourself if you were to start all over again?
Sure. So I started really kind of in the journalism field, just writing about recaps for my high school's sports. So I realized one day that I just wanted to write about sports, because I mean I'm watching the games, I'm at all the games. So and I've always been good at writing. So I just started going to all the games, writing recaps and giving them to my high school's athletic director, and he would publish them on the website. And it went from there to majoring in journalism at the University of Maryland in College Park, go Terps, and they have either broadcast or they have multi-platform. And I went broadcast with the intent of someday becoming a sports anchor or even like an evening news anchor, right? And one of the reasons for that was I was told by my advisor that it was easier to go, if you change your mind, from broadcast to multi than the other way around, because in broadcast you get taught how to use like Adobe Audition and Premiere and all these editing things, whereas the other was more just like in the field, quote unquote, stuff. So I was like, okay. So I wanted to be an anchor, had some internships, and with local TV stations, I live in the DC area. And so one summer I had two unpaid internships at two different TV stations with their sports departments. And that was when I really realized that I didn't like that everything was off the prompter, right? So yeah, you say what you want essentially, but it's all off the prompter and you only get like 30 seconds a topic. And that's when I really found that I liked radio better, because it's more free. And this is the same reason I started a podcast, is it's more free. And, you know, if something is really important, like AC Milan's financial situation, you don't have to sum it up in 30 seconds. You can spend as much time as you need or is appropriate. You can bring on a guest for it. You can do this. So I applied to an internship at SiriusXM in the spring semester of my senior year, and I only had classes like 3 days a week. So I had some open days, and I applied to Sirius and their sports internship, and I was lucky enough to get placed with the soccer channel. And I met the guys there. Pete, the executive producer, is an Inter fan. So, you know, I walk into the studio, there's this Inter flag, and I was like, who's an Inter fan? And they were like, oh, Pete is. I was like, oh no, I can't trash talk the EP. That was interesting. And he was like, why? I'm like, I'm an AC Milan fan. He was like, oh, you started so well. That's a shame. These guys, Pete, Tim, Andy, A-Dub, Passaro, Logan, Nick, these guys all brought me in, helped me learn the system that we use and the board. And I went from someone who like knew how to basic audio edit to someone who was able to be associate producer for these shows as an intern. I asked if I could apply to a part-time job with the channel after my internship ended, and I worked really hard and took every day kind of as an audition to be someone who could work there. So I went in every day, worked really hard, and asked Pete if I could apply, and I was able to apply to a position and got it, and then started working there a month after I graduated and a month after my internship ended. So I've been working there. July 1st will be 1 year working at Sirius officially as an AP. And it's been a fantastic experience. I can't recommend it enough. And if you have Sirius, channel 157, that's where we're at. I promise it's really good content. It's a lot of fun. I work on Counterattack a lot with Tony Miola, yeah. Brian Dunseth, and Andrew Williams, and it's a lot of fun. We have David on all the time to talk Syria, and when Milan's financial meltdown happens, we'll have you again, and it'll be great. And so in terms of advice, my advice to myself and anyone looking to get into it is, one, read a lot of different things in terms of like sports media. If you are interested in getting into sports media, read a lot of different things. You know, read the long form things. Read the interactive things. One of the coolest things I found online was the Telegraph did this interactive World Cup predictor where you pick the groups and then it puts the bracket and you pick who wins. And it's just like, do the interactive things, read the long things, read the recaps, you know, don't just read the headline, or read the recap, read how they describe certain things. You know, if it's a baseball article, how do they describe, you know, how do they describe a no hitter, right? How do they describe this? How do they go into a championship? How do they do this? So read that and listen to a lot of different things. Listen to and watch the news and see how they do it. And are you willing to do, the reason I didn't continue into the reporter / anchor thing is I didn't want to move away from my family and my girlfriend to wherever I would have to go. The example given to me was always middle of nowhere, Iowa, which is kind of redundant to me because Iowa is the middle of nowhere, but they were like, you know, you have to do that for very, very little money for like years and all this stuff. And it just didn't sound like my cup of tea.
Yep.
So I went into producing radio and it's, you know, it's an hour away from me. I drive and I love going into work every day. So read different things.
Yeah,
watch different things, listen to different things.
I think that's great advice on reading a bunch even on the other sports. Like I listen to a ton of podcasts on the NBA, read a ton on the NBA, and I pick up a lot of things that I use on the podcast in my own writing. So really, really great stuff. So of course, if you're in the U.S., check out SiriusXM. Regardless of where you live, you can read Patrick's great work on SB Nation and his podcast. It was an absolute pleasure to have you on, Patrick. Thank you so much for joining us today.
David, Alex, thanks so much for having me. And anytime, just call me up.